Welcome to the PLOS Medicine Podcast. I'm Tom McBride, Associate Editor at PLOS Medicine. In this podcast, you'll hear the first of my interviews with the guest editors of our new special issue on dementia. I'll be speaking with Dr. Bruce Miller, Director of the Memory and Aging Center at the University of California, San Francisco, where he is also the A.W. and Mary Margaret Clausen Distinguished Professor in Neurology. Next week, I'll be speaking with Dr. Miller's co-guest editor on the special issue, Dr. Carol Brain. Dr. Brain is the director of the Cambridge Institute of Public Health at the University of Cambridge. If you'd like to submit to our special issue, go to our homepage at plosmedicine.org and follow the link for the call for papers. Submissions close on Friday, September 30th. Thanks for joining us, Bruce.
Really excited to be here. Thank you, Thomas.
All right. What makes it so difficult to diagnose a specific type of dementia? And what are the impacts on patient care when dementia is undiagnosed or misdiagnosed?
Yeah, I think that in our field, increasingly, we believe that diagnosis in a very precise way is critical for the management of patients. I think one important reason for this is that there are many treatable forms of dementia. Simple things like vitamin deficiency, B12 in particular, thyroid deficiency or hyperthyroidism, medication-induced cognitive issues, depression. These are all major causes for cognitive symptoms and even cognitive impairment that have a precise therapy. The second aspect of this is we are beginning to make some subtle headway into the treatment of different dementias. Alzheimer's disease has a few medications that have mild efficacy, symptomatic effects. And I think this is another reason for precise diagnosis. There are huge genetic implications around diagnosis. Some dementias are very strongly genetic. Others have very little genetic risk. And then finally, I think beyond management, there's opportunities for research and precision in the research cohorts that we study is also critically important. I think we've oversimplified diagnosis. We've tended to think of diagnosis as only being due to Alzheimer's disease. Increasingly, we know that's false. In younger people, Alzheimer's is not even the major cause for dementia. Frontotemporal dementia is. We also know that the older we get, the more likely we are to have mixed problems. So it's not unusual in someone in their 80s to have a combination of molecular causes of Parkinson's type dementia, Alzheimer's disease, vascular changes, metabolic factors. So I think this is very complex, multidimensional, requires expertise.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference this year, there were a number of presentations and posters on research around diagnosis, including behavioral screens, biomarkers, and imaging technologies to diagnose and track progression of dementias. There was also some skepticism and a debate about the clinical readiness of biomarkers. In your opinion, what technologies are most clinically ready? And if none are, you know, is there benefit in implementing early screening for research purposes?
Yeah, I think important, again, multifaceted question. The first aspect of this is if we can diagnose early, can we make an intervention? And I think clinically, for the most part, the answer is no. But I think for research, this is a critically important question. So I think molecular imaging is greatly increasing our ability to tell whether someone is in the early preclinical or early symptomatic stages of Alzheimer's disease. We think that is a window during which therapies are going to be very helpful. So I think in this case, the molecular imaging is incredibly valuable for pushing forward our research efforts. Clinically, that's a much bigger question. Do we want to know whether someone has early Alzheimer's disease? We know molecular imaging can cost many, many thousands of dollars. Spinal fluid evaluations are fairly accurate for Alzheimer's disease, but again, they are invasive, and the question is, how will that change in a positive way somebody's life? And I think that's where a lot of the debate is going right now. For the other dementias, I think we're farther behind. I think for the Parkinson's dementia, we don't have a good biomarker for Lewy bodies. For frontotemporal dementia, we're just beginning to see some biomarkers for tau, but their specificity is really questioned. Vascular dementia, I think we're very good at diagnosing, and the biomarker MRI is very accurate, and I think we can often act upon findings related to vascular changes in the brain. So that's one of the reasons that imaging is so critically important in the assessment of a patient with dementia.
And as far as improvements go for early diagnosis and then therefore early treatment, is this likely to improve our ability to prevent or slow dementia in the near future?
Yes, we think that based on the clinical trials so far, that treating Alzheimer's disease with an amyloid lowering agent like an antibody is not very effective. The trials have been almost completely negative, although some newer trials are still going on. So with that set of data in mind, we know that if we're going to make an impact with amyloid lowering, it's going to have to be at an early stage of the disease. And I think that's where the amyloid imaging is critically important. We know from the clinical trials with amyloid lowering agents that about a third of a major subset of patients did not have amyloid in the brain. And that's why I think every study henceforth has used amyloid imaging as a biomarker for putting patients into clinical trials. We really need it, and we really need it for early characterization.
Mm-hmm. Identifying effective drugs to slow or reverse the progression of dementia, in particular Alzheimer's, has been a frustrating pursuit, and it had little progress in the past decades. Is there any reason to think that this will change in the near future? A number of drug companies are targeting tau now.
Yes.
And is there a reason to think that this strategy will be more successful than targeting amyloid beta has been?
Yes. I think so. I think we know, at least in Alzheimer's disease, that clinical symptoms correlate very strongly with where tau is in the brain. Amyloid can be present in the brain without any clinical symptoms. That's one of the reasons that I'm in the tauist category. I believe that tau lowering has a great potential for treatment of Alzheimer's disease and other tauopathies. So I think this is a really exciting phase in understanding these diseases. We're really in our infancy. I think the war on cancer began in 1970. Around that time, there was less than $1 million in research into Alzheimer's disease. So this is only in the last few years have we started to see the kind of budget where we think we can start to make an impact. As our therapeutic approaches improve, as our diagnostic precision improves, and as we start to describe the phenomenology of these dementias and in the multifaceted, complex way that these diseases really exist, I think we're really on the verge of making some significant progress.
That's great. That's great. It's an exciting time. And outside of traditional pharmaceuticals, are there promising interventions for slowing and preventing dementia?
Yes, I think there are two really exciting stories around this. I think one is the story that we think there are a number of risk factors for dementia that are preventable, that are treatable, that are possibly even reversible. Many of these follow around the cardiovascular risk factors, high cholesterol, hypertension. We have really, really strong data, certainly with hypertension, that if you lower hypertension, you decrease the risk for developing dementia, whether it happens in middle age or later in life. Very, very important. We think there are other risk factors that are preventable, things like head trauma, a major risk factor for dementia, probably Alzheimer's disease as well, and also issues related to poor sleep, stress, lack of exercise. I think the data is emerging that these are all things that we can do something about. The important and sad part of this story is that middle and low income populations and middle and low income countries, where the population at greatest risk is greatly increasing, are much less likely to treat these preventable factors.
Now, Alzheimer's disease receives the most attention because it's the leading cause of dementia, affects the most people. But what about these other types of dementia? You mentioned frontal temporal dementia is more common in adults under 60. So what is the state of care and treatment for these diseases, as well as the research on these diseases?
Yes. I think just as dementia research in general followed research in cancer, I think the bulk of the research in dementia focused on Alzheimer's disease for the first 20, 25 years. So I think we've made more advances in Alzheimer's disease than the Parkinson's dementias, or what we call the Lewy body dementias, and the frontotemporal dementias. So I think we're a little closer in precise diagnosis in Alzheimer's disease. We have really almost no imaging or CSF or plasma biomarkers for frontotemporal dementia or Parkinsonian dementias yet. So I think the diagnostic precision has lagged. And I think for that reason, I think a lot less money also has gone into treatment and research into treatment. So I think we're a little bit behind. But some of us are very excited. I study frontotemporal dementia. And I think there are subsets of these patients with genetic forms where we can detect patients early in the illness, predict the progression based on our biomarker data, and give very precise molecular therapies. In the case of tau mutations, anti-tau drugs. In the case of progranulin mutations, drugs that increase progranulin levels. I think these are perhaps some of the most promising therapeutic approaches yet devised in dementia.
And what do we know about the relationship between brain injury, both concussive and subconcussive events that may lead to neurological symptoms later in life? Is there also something to be learned from individuals who have suffered from, say, Parkinson's-like or Alzheimer's-like symptoms after TBE that can inform our understanding of Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease or any of these other dementias?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is an area that we really have overlooked for a long time. And I think there's been literature that we have known about that traumatic brain injury increases the risk for dementia. How much it increases the risk is somewhat debated. We think it increases the risk about twofold. But I think there's been also a lag in research into what kind of dementia traumatic brain injury induces. And I think this is, again, a very complicated area. Some excitement has come from research in players in the National Football League, hockey players as well in Canada. And we realize that some of these individuals are susceptible to a tauopathy. So years, sometimes many years after traumatic brain injury, there is a slow progressive accumulation of tau in the brain. It causes profound emotional deficits, behavior and executive control deficits, Parkinson's type symptoms. And this is another population that I think we might be able to target very early and diagnose early and think about prevention. So a whole new area, I think, is opened up in dementia around head trauma, I'd say only in the last 3 or 4 years.
And you mentioned earlier about how dementia research funding has lagged behind, say, cancer research. And recently, there has been a more of an investment in the NIH provided an additional budget specifically for funding research on Alzheimer's disease from 2017 through 2025. It's an additional $323 million in 2017 to be updated in future years. With this additional investment, what sort of returns are we expecting to see?
Yes. This is very exciting for a researcher like me. I would say until the recent expansion of the budget, these were the bleakest years in terms of research funding for dementia. The budgets were flatline for maybe 8 to 10 years. And I think the percentage of young investigators funding we were very concerned was diminishing. With this sudden boost in funding, very significant boost, for the first time, I think we're starting to see pay lines again that make us optimistic for this new generation of researchers that we must see move into the field. And this is already having an impact on the kind of big research we can do around precision medicine, training more young investigators, basic scientists, clinical translational scientists, and doing big pharmaceutical research trials as well. It's badly needed and extremely exciting, and there's even talk about a billion-dollar budget soon, so this would be phenomenal.
That'd be great, yeah. Well, thank you for giving me the time.
Thank you for putting out this, I think, very important edition of PLOS Medicine. It's a very prestigious journal, and I think to be able to put our basic and clinical science around dementia into PLOS Medicine is going to increase the interest in this area and I think enhance our field.
Well, we're really excited about our special issue, and we're really excited to have both Bruce Miller with me right now and Carol Brain as our guest editors for this special issue.
I'm excited too. Carol and I have been friends for many years, and we've already enjoyed working with the PLOS Medicine staff and together thinking about the kind of editorials, information around dementia that might help further understanding around this area.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Dr. Bruce Miller. Come back next week to hear my interview with his co-guest editor on the Dementia Special Issue, Dr. Carol Brain, director of the Cambridge Institute of Public Health at the University of Cambridge. Don't forget to submit to the Dementia Special Issue by Friday, September 30th, and be on the lookout for the special issue early next year. The PLOS Medicine podcast is made by PLOS, the Public Library of Science, a nonprofit open-access publisher dedicated to transforming how research is communicated. This show was edited by Will Jackson. I'm your host, Tom McBride. Get in touch with us by email, plosmedicine@plos.org, and follow us on Twitter, @plosmedicine. Thanks for listening.